you see how hard life is for your parents and how much they had to do and how people perceive them, that obviously everything that I've done has been contrary to that. I've done everything possible to make sure that I identify as American, so to speak, you know? So even something simple as like my parents speak their native language at home, I understand it fully. And I had I probably spoke until about, I was 4 years old, but even then I pretty much gave up speaking it. And growing up is when you realize that I was an idiot. Why did I do that? Because I can understand everything they're saying, but I literally for the life of me cannot speak it back. And I can think thoughts in it, which is weird, but I can't speak it. And so I admire so much of what my parents did. So for me now, the respect is out of this world for them. So if I could be half of what they were, understanding the climate that they came, that they had to, you know, manufacture as much of a normal life as possible for us growing up, then, I mean, if I could be half of that, that'd be great. But growing up, I probably wanted to be everything that they weren't.
I've never really thought about whether I fear becoming my parents, but I think the number one thing is the gender roles in the home. And for me, I you know, my mother was working, you know, 8-10 hours a day. My stepfather was also working 8-10 hours a day. But then when they got home, it was very different. You know, my stepfather would just relax, and yet she's cooking, she's cleaning, you know, she's doing just about everything. So I think that's one particular piece that I would not want it to be that way. You know, I think in my home, as much as it sounds like a great idea to just come home and do that, I wouldn't want to put the burden on my girlfriend or spouse, you know, and say, hey, you know what, you do everything in the house, you do everything, and I'm just going to relax. I think it's teamwork. So if there's one particular thing, as much as I admire my parents and definitely admire my mom for, you know, leading the charge in the home and also, you know, leading the charge in the workplace, I would not want it to be that way. I think I want it to, it needs to be a team effort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy the fact that we also have the chance to choose now. Mm-hmm. And it's not so, for me, it was never like pushed on me that that's the way that I needed to be, that I needed to be like my mom. It was always very clear to me, especially I went to school and was a women and gender studies major. It's funny, my sister was the one that always clashed with my dad, and I was like daddy's girl type of thing. And then I got along great with my mom, but it was always like my sister would clash so hard with him all the time because like I think she wanted to like be him growing up, and whereas I just wanted his love all the time. And I grew up with a completely different set of parents than my siblings did, I believe. Especially with such a huge gap between, it's like 10, 12, and 13 years between me and like my siblings, that like by the time that they had me, like because their stories just don't line up with the stories that I have. I'm like, oh my, like I had affectionate parents, like
you had the American
my siblings
parents.
Love me.
I was my mom's favorite, and my dad and my sister was my dad's favorite. And I think it's just because my sister was so much like my dad. Like, she was out. Let me tell you, she was hitting the streets and she was hanging out. And my dad was doing the same thing. So my dad has been here since he was 13. So he knows this American lifestyle. You know, he knows the clubs. He had the big fro, the disco look. And my sister, she embodies that lifestyle. She was always just out and about. And for me, you know, I was a nerd. I wanted to read books, and my mom read books, and I wanted to watch movies, and I wanted to do this. And even till now, even though my dad lives with me, gun to the head, love him dearly, but I'm dying. You know, he'll still say, you know, how's your sister doing? You know, she needs some money. Let me send her some money. Let me do this. I'm like, dude, I'm right here. I need some money.
Give me some money.
You're living with me. But no, I don't think there was a difference. I will say this, though. We did try to make sure that, although my dad didn't have any boys, that we played sports. This way he could be like, yes. You know, he never came to any game, though. How interesting is that? We wanted to play sports for him, and he never came to any game.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Preen.
What it do? I'm Sky. What did do? What was that? Was that like your Jersey accent? What was that?
I don't know what accent.
That was kind of Wendy. Like, how you doing?
Ew.
I love Wendy.
No.
Okay, fine.
Never mind. I'm Sky.
Not Wendy Williams. This is Sky.
I don't want anyone to get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted, guys. We're back with a new episode. And something that, you know, we wanted to tap on was just we were raised by two amazingly, wonderfully strong Liberian women. And what that meant for us and how their strength, and I think just being like a immigrant woman coming to a new country and having a whole new perspective on just like working in also how just trying to provide and create a better life for their children and for us, what that really meant and how hard that could have been. And in return, like that effect that that had on us.
Yeah. So this week we're going to be talking and our guests will be talking a lot about parenting because we have an announcement. We're pregnant.
We are pregnant.
No, I'm just kidding, y'all. Ain't with nobody having
an episode.
Here. I am about to be an aunt, though, which does get me thinking a lot about parenting and thinking about like how my brother is going to parent and how his wonderful wife is going to be a parent. And really just reflecting on my mother in particular, as Perrine was saying, and how kind of my parents like showed us like the idea of like what that means to be a parent and what it means to be a child of parents who are Liberian immigrants in my particular case. I think it's really funny thinking about it because, you know, kind of the stereotype of mothers is that they're, you know, so warm and nurturing and sweet and caring. And, you know, they're the ones that you go to for like the warm hugs, whereas the father is stern. And in my household growing up, I grew up with my mom and my dad. And for me, and I'll say this is very specific for me as the only daughter, my dad was the one who was like, I go to this person for the hugs and the nurturing and the caring because I was a daddy's girl. And my mom was like this one who punished me because my dad never did. And I'll say like spoiled. Looking at it. Oh yeah. I'm extremely
brat.
Spoiled. My father spoiled
not really
me
a brat,
rotten.
Just spoiled my, all the toys.
No,
y'all
actually,
she had every toy.
Do y'all remember the rapper DaBrat? My brothers used to call me the brat. And I thought it was because, like, they thought I looked like her, acted like her or something.
Nah, girl.
No, it's because I was just a brat. But, like, I thought it was a compliment. So I took it.
Nah, girl.
Until I was, like, 10. It's really sad. It took me 10 years before I realized it was not a compliment.
Long time.
But, you know, children are dumb. So.
Okay.
Let's be real.
All right.
But, yeah. So, like, my parents kind of, like, for me, it was completely different. Whereas, like, for my brothers, my mother, they're all mama's boys. I'm sorry, y'all, but y'all are.
And nothing wrong with that.
And they were coddled by her, and like, you know, she was the warm one to them, whereas like my dad was so warm to them, but he was still the enforcer for them. Like he would, you know, take the belt off and I would get them in trouble and go to my dad and tell them, you know, oh, Stacey hit me, or like Luelle pushed me, or you know, whatever, like if
title
I wanted
fail.
Them to
snitch.
Sometimes I lied on them just straight
Dang.
Up lying. Because no, this is the thing.
Oh.
I will say this publicly. Like, yes, I did lie on my brothers sometimes to get them, like, in trouble.
That's a slight mess, but kind of a hot mess. But, no, that's interesting. And, you know, we've talked about, like, gender roles and whatnot, like, in the household. And I always thought that was really, like, interesting. A really cool perspective, I think, on just, like, masculinity and femininity that you were exposed to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, like, you know, my father passed away when I was very young. And so when we were in the household, you know, my mother being a single parent and raising us, it was just interesting. And it's something that my mom didn't really talk too much about with us when we were young. But as we became adults, something that she admitted to us. And she kind of always lumps this in when she's talking about how proud of us that she is that after my father passed away, a lot of family members looked at her like, she ain't gonna raise these kids. These kids aren't gonna amount to anything. Like without Baymac, that's what they called my father, without Baymac, she can't raise these kids. Those kids aren't going to aspire to anything. They're not going to be anything. They're not going to do anything. And, you know, people spoke that upon, like, my siblings and I. And, you know, I never knew that. Like, when you're a kid, you don't know about, like, the family drama and all of that. And to just know that my mom, you know, she had a hard time, you know, raising 3-4 kids, like, in America alone. But, you know, she figured it out and she did the best that she could. And she held down the household as well as she could. And she always just wanted the best for us. If, like, my grades were slipping, she, like, if I got a C in math, I remember I got a C in math, like, my mom came to the school and was like, you're going to tutoring. Like, actually, after school, like, no cheerleading, nah, you're going to tutoring. And I'm like, but first of all, like, you could have just, you know, written that on my little interim report, or I don't know. Like, it was a little excessive, but at the same time, it was very, like, protective in her wanting the best for us. But just, like, talking about just, like, parenting, she's also very strict, and everyone knows that. And that, I think, also has, like, a huge correlation into me and, like, how I, like, me growing up and just, I guess, like, my outlook and perspective. I was very sheltered. She was very strict. She, like, laid down the law. I remember, like, even, like, some friends, like, used to go to, like, a teenage, like, a preteen club, like, in Greens. They are fast little kids. There was a preteen teen club that these little kids used to go to. And I remember, like, some of my friends used to be like, like, come on, let's go. And, like, Erlene was like, to a what? Like, even today, if I talk about going to, like, a bar or, like, a club, like, maybe not so much a bar, but, like, a club, or when I actually used to go to clubs. Oh, because, like, Erlene would be like, no, like, you're going to get shot. Like, no, stay home. Like, why are you going to that? What is there? There's nothing good there.
Well, that's true.
And she was right. But at the same time, it really influenced me heavily, just, you know, the person that I am. And I think that it made me a lot more aware about who I surround myself with, who I have in my circle, and, like, the friends and the people that I allow to be around me. She instilled that, and she really, you know, really, really emphasized that for us about the company that you keep, and really wanted for us to make the most of ourselves. Our parents had a huge impact on us, just period. And I think it's really interesting and really insightful to see, like, all of their sacrifices and all that they did for us, and how in return we've kind of, you know, made something of this American life. This is Patrice's story.
My name is Patrice Gopo, and I identify culturally as a Jamaican American. I'm a Black American. I also identify sometimes as being multiracial. We have South Asian ancestry in my family, so both of my grandfathers were originally, their ancestors would have originally come from India, so they're Indo-Caribbean. I've been living in the South for about 7 years now. I originally grew up in Alaska, so my parents are Jamaican immigrants, and they ended up living in Alaska. My father came to New York City, and then he ended up moving to Alaska. And then when he married my mother, she came up to Alaska as well. So I grew up as the child of Jamaican immigrants in Anchorage, Alaska, which was, I think, a really interesting place to have grown up, honestly, because I feel like there's not a lot of Black people in general in Alaska. So I think there was always this tension about being a Black American, but then also having this aspect of my Blackness that was also connected to Jamaica. So it was a little confusing for people, I think, at times. I think now, looking back, what I often say to people is I felt like I was growing up as a minority of a minority. And so I think, in a way, as a Jamaican American, a Black Jamaican American who appeared Black, to the Black students around me, I was a Black child, which I agree with. I absolutely agree with. But I felt like there were things that I often didn't always understand or didn't always connect as well with, because my parents, to be honest, they grew up in Jamaica. So they had very little understanding of the history of being Black in America. So it wasn't as though they necessarily had all the tools to impart to their children about that experience. And so I felt as though in my classes, I might be the only Black child, and you would be called on to represent the Black American experience to these people who assume you know everything there is about that, when in fact I didn't. And so I think what it sometimes felt like was that I was just failing everyone at, I don't know, just being a Black person, I guess, and perhaps not fully knowing things. Yeah, I think I hadn't really thought about it like that before, but I do feel like it sometimes felt like you were kind of failing the expectations that people had of you. So I think that was kind of challenging. And I think there was also this part of me that wanted people to understand that there were these just different layers to who I was. But again, I think I didn't always fully understand what those different layers were to who I was. And so I think it was really a lot of trying to figure out, well, where do I fit? Where am I part of? Which is why I'm a writer today, and I write a lot, and I write a lot about identity formation. I write a lot about race. I write a lot about the ways in which we categorize people, because I feel like we often hand people a very narrow narrative of what their experience should be. And I'm not against the narratives, because I think there's truth to them to some extent. But I also feel like it's important for a variety of stories to surface so that people understand that just because I might look a certain way doesn't necessarily mean I've lived all the experiences that you are tossing in my direction. So I left Alaska when I was almost 18, and I went to college in Pennsylvania. And over the course of the next decade, I lived in a variety of places for graduate school as well. I lived overseas. I eventually ended up in South Africa, where I met my husband, who's from Zimbabwe. And we started life in South Africa. So my first child was born in South Africa. And then after my first child was born, we decided it would be good to move back to the States. And we kind of just on a whim picked Charlotte. I felt like we needed someplace warmer than Anchorage, because my husband's from Zimbabwe, and I felt like that would be a cruel thing to move to Alaska. And the couple times he's been there in the winter, he said it is the coldest he's ever been in his entire life, and I understand. So we picked Charlotte, and I think the other thing about Charlotte was I felt like, just felt like it would be a good place for a Black family to be. And so we thought, okay, well, let's just give it a try. And so I think one of the things I have appreciated a lot about Charlotte is that I have found a variety of people in Charlotte that have had different experiences. So I think one thing that's neat about being here is that there are a lot of transplants who have come to Charlotte. And more I'm finding that there are people who maybe haven't necessarily lived like one single narrative. It's nice to feel like you have access to other people who may have had not the same experience as you, but maybe their experience has been different in a similar kind of way. But I think that said, Charlotte and my experience in the South is that I think it still deals a lot with segregation issues, to be honest. And I think a lot of the conversations we have are about Black and white, and maybe there's not as much nuance for what that might actually be for maybe all the people who associate with being Black, that there's actually a lot of nuance involved in that. And so I feel like sometimes there's less space for that reality. One thing I enjoyed a lot about being here in the South versus being in Alaska was just that there were more people that looked like me, so that's been neat as well. But I should say, I mean, I think Alaska has some wonderful things. So when I think about my parenting techniques and how they compare to my mother's, the experience of me having grown up fully in America versus my mother, who grew up in Jamaica and then transitioned to live in America and as she was raising children. And I just feel like there are certain things that maybe she sometimes values more than I value now. So I guess one example that I feel is she often will talk about this idea that my sister and I, we don't understand what it means to work hard, that we we don't get that. And because of that, we are, I don't know. I don't want to say that she thinks there's a deficiency in us, but I think she does often express this idea that we have not developed some sort of like strength or something that she feels like she should have imparted better to us. And I often think that's interesting because I feel like I am a hard worker. I work hard. My parents taught me to be a very hard worker, but I also feel as though maybe the type of working hard is different for what my generation is and what we may have been required to do to achieve. So I think sometimes when she talks about hard work, she's literally meaning like physical labor or something. Not that, I mean, she's a nurse, so it's not necessarily that she feels like I have to be, I don't know, doing things with my hands or something like that. But I do think she has this, like she'll mention older relatives in our family, and that's one thing she'll often talk about is this idea of, you know, how hard they've worked. And so sometimes when I think about my own girls, I feel as though I'm probably not imparting that to them as well. And I'm actually, I'm reading this book right now. Shame, I'm forgetting the title, so I'll tell you in a second when I can look it up. But they were actually just making the same thing. The mother was thinking, her daughter is too soft. I haven't, you know, done the things to raise her well. And so now I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, I'm in fact raising my children in a way with the privileges that my parents worked hard to enable us to have. And so now I think there's kind of a tension there because maybe they aren't actually, you know, working as hard at things as my parents' generation might have. And maybe they have lost something in that. I don't know. But I also think, but I think there's lots of things they've probably gained too, and lots of opportunities that they now have that maybe my parents' generation didn't. And so I guess in that, I feel like we do have these differing parenting styles. I remember people talking about things like this kind of before we got married and even when I was pregnant, just because I think there are a lot of stereotypes around how men from the continent, you know, might parent. And I think I would also want to say that we have to be careful with those things because it's, I think it can create this idea this is how it always is, and it isn't necessarily. So I would say my husband is one of the most involved parents I know. I mean, I really feel like we co-parent our children, and I really love that. And I will say, I think some of that has to do with his mother was a working mom, and he actually went to boarding school. And so from early on, he was kind of taking care of himself, learning how to, you know, iron his clothes, do whatever, just things. And so I think at this point, I feel as though our level of involvement is very similar with our children. And I would say, I think I tend to be maybe harder on my girls in terms of they need to do this, you need to get this done, you didn't. And I think he tends to be this more like understanding, trying to figure out what's going on, you know. So I feel like we really balance each other out well. So I'm really grateful. And again, I often think about the way our family structure functions, and I feel like it often can defy some of the stereotypes that people think about what should be happening within the walls of our home. I think my mother also, you know, grew up in an era where there was a lot more emphasis on maybe how you appeared to people around you and making sure you had these really strong, great impressions and stuff. And I think in a way, I feel like I've tried to move away from that because I feel like it can really set you up to always be trying to please people around you. And but yet I understand the necessity, given the times my mother was living in, why these things were important. And so, but I think when I look at my own girls, that's something I also feel I don't do as much as she did, was kind of emphasize that how you appear to people kind of qualities. So my mother has always taught me that women are strong, that we are strong people. Like, yeah, families are held together because of women. You know, these are things that she's, whether she said that or not, I feel like that's something that she's really communicated. And so that's something I really feel like I pass on to my girls, that we are strong, that, you know, we are people who thrive and we work hard in whatever way that means. But we, like, we remain. We are still here and we stand, you know. So those are things I feel like I really do pass on to my girls that my mom has taught me. She's said this before, and I even mentioned this in my book, that this idea, like, we come from a long line of strong women, and I just feel like that's something I give to them, that you come from a long line of strong women. So I was reading a great book a while back, and I'm not even going to mention the book because it's great, but in it there was one small place where the author mentioned how she was in a really kind of, or in the book, what's happening is the character is in a kind of depressive state. And so what she does is she goes to smoke weed with the Jamaicans. And I just feel as though that was the only mention of Jamaicans in the whole entire book. And look, I don't want to say that there isn't something, but I just feel like for that to be the only mention of Jamaicans, I just wish that wasn't the case, that that is often the only mention of Jamaicans. And it isn't always, but yeah, so that was one thing that I felt as though I would love for us to have a more expansive view of Jamaicans and not just make it about, you know, smoking weed. When you have multiple stories about different types of people, then you're able to recognize that there's a greater fullness to people. And so I think one of the challenges is that if you only have one or two stories about, you know, a particular place or group of people or something, it's super easy for people to decide, well, that's the extent of that place or that particular group of people. And I just think the more stories you have, the more you're able to see, no, actually, the human race is complex and, you know, there's space for this, that actually, you know, sometimes, in fact, a stereotype might be true, but it doesn't literally mean it's the only aspect of that place or that group of people. So, yeah, representation is huge. So my book is an essay collection. So I write personal essays, and I am, my book, that it's coming out later this summer, and it is about issues around race and racial identity and immigration and belonging. So it is really a bunch of essays that explore what it means to be the Black American child of Jamaican immigrants, growing up in a society that's very intent on classifying people and defining experiences based on what we look like. So I go through all sorts of things. I talk about, you know, growing up in predominantly white schools and what that might have been like. I talk about my family's transition moving to the South in the book. I explore things like hair and how society interacts with hair and beauty standards we have around hair. So just a whole bunch of different things that I explore in the book. So I'm really excited about this because I feel like it's an opportunity to touch on topics that I feel are, well, topics you guys talk about in this podcast even too. So I think there's lots of overlaps in the themes. But yeah, I mean, it's good. It's going to be good. I'm really excited about it. We often in our society can have these very narrow narratives, like I was talking about. And I feel like this is an opportunity to just help expand the narrative and recognize that there's so much greater depth to people and their stories. And so I'm excited to be in a small way contributing to that kind of work. So what makes me most proud to be Jamaican American? I think that's a great question. And I honestly feel like I love being part of something bigger than just me. I feel like to be Jamaican American is for me to affirm, like, I belong to this larger entity that's out there. And sometimes you run into other Jamaican Americans in the world, and I love that momentary feeling of kinship that happens when you meet someone. But the other thing that I think is kind of fun about being Jamaican American too is when I am out there in the larger world, like traveling, I know when I was in Cape Town and I was meeting people from lots of different parts of the world and they would hear I was Jamaican, they would get really excited. And I think there's a thing out there in the world where people like Jamaicans. And I like that. I like to be part of that. So I know my husband, when I first met him, he mentioned how Bob Marley sang at Zimbabwe's Independence Day. And yeah, and so it was this really exciting kind of thing, like this boat. We're like, oh, that's so fun. That's cool, you know. So yeah, so I feel as though you get to be on the inside of something that's kind of neat.
So where can folks find you online to get more information about your book?
Yeah, you can go to patricegopo.com, or I can also be found on Instagram and Twitter at Patrice Gopo, and my Facebook page is Patrice Gopo Writes.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever else you get your podcasts. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at First Gens. Now that's the number one, STGENS. Plus, you can get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield, my wonderful cousin, and the show is co-hosted by Perrine and myself, Sky Wilson. All music heard in this episode was created by Nick Stubblefield, who is our amazing musical composer. Thank you to our roundtable crew, Jorge, Diana, Jeannie, and Emmanuel. And a special thanks to Patrice for sharing her First Gen experience. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for all your love and support.